Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the state capitol. On the program today, State Senator Scott Hammond joins us. Plus on the Power Pundit panel, Ruben Murillo, Brian Wachter, and Paul Muradkin. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
From your house to the White House, the folks at D&D Roofing can get it fixed with their eyes closed.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Safety is the number one priority for the trucking industry. Over $7 billion a year is spent on technology like this electronic eye that will apply the brakes automatically. But the most important factor for safety is the truck driver. These hardworking men and women who safely move over 70% of our nation's freight and 94% of Nevada's. We thank you because trucks move America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from Carson City. We're in the state capitol in the old Supreme Court, and we're delighted to welcome back to the program State Senator Scott Hammond of District 18, a much smaller district than Ira Hansen's.
Land-wise, yes, a much smaller district. Of course, when I was first in the assembly in 2011, my assembly district was, I think probably as large, maybe just smaller as far as size-wise, but the population, I had the largest district in the state other than the state senator who represented the same area. There was quite a few. That was right before we redistricted. So I'm used to small and large now.
To say the least. Yeah. Let's start out here with, you know, you were an unsuccessful candidate for Congress in 2018. You were running for CD3. What did you learn from that race? And will you ever run again?
So unsuccessful in the terms that I didn't get through, successful in terms of what I did learn. And what I learned was that persistence pays off. You have to, one of the most essential things for any candidate is you have to have enough name recognition. And there wasn't enough in that district. There weren't enough people who knew who I was or what I had accomplished, who had ever cast a vote for me. They had not gone in there and cast a ballot and voted for me. And so that is what I think that coming out of that congressional race, I actually built that name ID, which is really essential. People have to know who you are. I eventually lost to Mr. Tarkanian, who a lot of people have heard of. The name at least resonates down in Southern Nevada. He's got as much name recognition as perhaps the President of the United States right there in that, right, in that area. So what I learned is I needed to go out there and build that up. And I thought I had really done a good job during the campaign of getting out there and probably shaking hands with as many people as possible, talking to as many people as possible, going to as many doors as I possibly could. For a congressional candidate, I knocked a lot of doors. And so I did a lot of that, which is really important. And I think any, office holder, office hopeful will tell you that that's the essential stuff. And I did a lot of that, and I really got a feel for that particular area. I knew who the businesses, I knew a lot of the folks who were in their homes, and I felt like I could really understand and communicate their wishes and desires at a congressional level, at a national level. So I really accomplished that. That's what I was really impressed with myself. I mean, just going out there, I worked day in and day out on that.
And this is still a swing district, and so there is an opportunity for a Republican to take that seat again. Danny is not going to run again. Do you think that you might take another shot at it?
Probably not right away. I don't think it'll be this particular session I do, or this particular go-around. My wife and I are talking about whether or not we want to run for the state senate again. And it's really, it's a family effort when you do something like this.
Sure.
The whole family gets involved. And my children, who will be up here next week during spring break, they're all excited about running again for the state senate. And so I think we'll stick to that. I learned enough that I know that I probably need to wait until a little bit more name idea is built up.
All right, let's move to some more serious stuff here.
All right.
Senator Parks is sponsoring the doctor-assisted suicide law, which will allow physicians to prescribe the life-ending drugs we've talked about many times on this program to terminate ill patients. You noted that Nevada has only a 30-day residency requirement and asked whether people might move to the state in the interest of, quote, suicide tourism to end their lives. Has this bill been amended to your satisfaction, or do you still oppose it?
It is not. I still oppose the bill for a couple of reasons. One is that the attraction. Las Vegas is always going to be a destiny and a destiny for people who want something different, and I just don't want it to be labeled for that purpose. That aside, the other part of the bill that I still have issues with is right now, if you went out there and you got your physician to sign off and another physician to sign off, you can get that medication. It's self-administered, so you can keep it by your bedside for 6 months if you feel, because again, the bill states that you have to be within 6 months of your life terminating. What if you're on that seventh or eighth month and heaven forbid your son, daughter, somebody just doesn't feel like it's going fast enough and they put a down payment on a house? Or, the reality is after 6 or 7 months, because you don't have anybody, the bill does not prescribe that you have to have a doctor present or anybody has to be present. So if somebody shows up and then puts it in your drink and you drink it and you're gone, the bill states that when a coroner shows up, they have to, because you already asked for those pills, they have to put on the death certificate that you died of whatever that disease was that would have killed you in the end. That's what goes on the death certificate. There's no inquiry. There's no questioning.
So is there any evidence of this in any of the other states? And I mean literal evidence that you can say that you read a newspaper story, a police report.
Personally, I have not. That's a question. But to me, the ability of that being there worries me, because that opens the door for that. There is nothing. What they do know is that, I can't tell you that I've seen it personally. This is what came out during testimony during the hearing, that there are a lot of deaths that occur and nobody goes in and really finds out what happened. They don't take the stats on that because they only can put down what that patient would have died of, or what that person would have died of.
But you don't really need this kind of bill to have murder. I mean, State Treasurer Kathy Augustine was murdered by her husband.
But they investigated. This you wouldn't.
They were lucky they found out, because it was
right.
A pretty tricky
but
case.
But this you can't even investigate, because there would be no inquiry. There's the.
Let me back up a second here, because of time limits. So and obviously I'm in favor of this. So I'll put that on the table for this discussion. You are given a verdict from your doctor that you are going to have a very painful next 6 months, and you don't want to go through that. I mean, do you want to put your family through that? Do you want to put your kids through that? Do you want to put yourself through that? Shouldn't you have the right to choose whether you wish to go through that experience, or whether you would rather take another route that may be less painful for yourself and for your family?
Yeah, and it seems like that, if you put that in the box and say this is what this is all about, that seems plausible. It seems like that's the way we want to go out.
Because I want control.
We want control.
I don't want to be a burden on my family.
Absolutely.
I if I find out that I've got some horrible disease that's going to take me out, then I want to take care of business.
And it seems neat and clean when you describe it like that. But the reality is, as we heard in testimony also, the young lady, and I can't recall her name, her husband had been given one of those 6 month sentences, so to speak. And at the time there was not the ability to do this, to access the drugs. had he taken it, and he told his wife, had I gotten access to those drugs, I probably would have taken it. The reality is he ended up living for about 2.5 to 3 years, fathered another child with her, was able to spend 2.5 more years with his son and with the family. And he felt like if he had had those drugs, he most likely would have taken them because he was really depressed, as you can imagine, when you're told that you only have 6 months to live or less. You get a little bit depressed and you do start thinking, I don't want to be a burden on the family. But the reality is he would have ended his life about 2 years earlier than it did. And so that, coupled with the fact that I'm still worried about coercion, about somebody aiding you and then not having any inquiry, those are the two things that give me pause.
All right, let's take a break.
Okay.
More topics coming up. We'll be right back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
Yeah.
Because of UMC, I'm putting my free time to good use.
Because of UMC, she keeps me on my toes.
Because of UMC and this guy, I'm here.
UMC, the highest level of care in Nevada.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines, just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Scott Hammond. He represents District 18. You're proposing tougher DUI laws, including increasing the minimum sentence for a conviction from 2 days to 30 days. It also removes the requirement that a person have at least 3 impaired driving or DUI convictions to be convicted of vehicular homicide, which is a Category A felony, as you know. This seems to go against the Democrats' judicial reforms. And considering the makeup of the two houses, what's the status of your bill?
Well, the status of the bill is actually, and this is a timely question because I met with both DAs and the PDs yesterday, and we kind of looked at what direction we want to go in. And the reality is right now there's also a lot of talk about marijuana, the use of marijuana, the impairment levels of marijuana. And so there's going to be a push to do a study to understand nanograms a little bit better than we do now. And so I think that in the end, what we decided is that a lot of the asks of this bill should probably be postponed until after we do that, because I think we have to correlate, make sure that the laws, both for DUI, for alcohol, and for drugs, marijuana in this particular case, that they probably need to align a little bit better. We have to have a better idea so we can give, you know, law enforcement a clearer direction of what we want to do. I think that we're going to see some movement on this. I particularly like a couple of the pieces of that bill. One, giving law enforcement 3 hours instead of 2 hours to go and get their work done, the blood work. In some areas, the rural areas especially, it's harder to get to a place where they can actually draw blood and really have any certainty on what the blood level is. So I think that we're going to see movement on that. And of course, this came from a constituent of mine who just around my, literally the first light that you come to after you leave my subdivision, a young man was on his way to school and was hit from behind by an impaired driver. It wasn't his first offense, wasn't his second offense. Wasn't even his third offense. He'd been arrested twice for DUI outside the state and then twice within. And so that provision that said that you have to have, you know, this condition and this condition and this condition, that's what really hurt, because he's back on the road and it really should have been an or. We can live with some of the other aspects of the law and waiting until a study is done and then finding out what we need to do. But I really feel for Jalen's mom. Jalen is the young man who lost his life, and I feel for it because it was needless. And that's the difference. I know that right now the trend is how do we really treat criminals, those who have broken the law, and how do we rehabilitate them, get them back into society as quickly as possible, and as repaired as possible, right? Get out there with the hope that they need. I'm all about that. I'm really about looking at the criminal justice system and then finding the right balance. In this case, this is the one type of crime that I just don't get. People know that when they drink and get behind the wheel, they have the potential to take somebody else's life. And that's selfish in my mind. And I think that if we can do anything to try and prevent that person from getting behind that wheel, especially with all the technology you have, you know, the Uber, the Lyfts, and you have all these other, the taxi, they'll come and get you. But yet we still have people who do this. I think that we need to really hit them hard and say, is this the life that you want to do? So I think that it should be this, the first time you have a DUI, we've got to be tough on them.
It's been interesting following the marijuana story over the last few years on this program. One of the things I've been impressed by is how law enforcement on the local level, Reno PD's deputy chief was on the program, talking to mayors around the state about the highway patrol in both Nevada, Utah, Colorado, how they're dealing with the fact that marijuana is now legal, and because it's legal, they are not going hog wild sitting outside of every casino, bar, restaurant, waiting for somebody to come out and pop them. And we haven't seen an incredible rash of DUIs connected to marijuana. So, you know, what was your sense coming out of these meetings with the law enforcement officers as to what the situation is?
Well, I come out of every single meeting when we're talking about we need to study it, and it's really about how long the effects of the drug stay in a body. You know, you can still have some of the effects of the drug in your body and not be impaired. You're
right,
not
like 30 days.
Yeah, and so we have to do a better job of studying that, because we got to give the right tools to law enforcement. I think one of one of my colleagues, Senator Harris, has got a bill talking about medical marijuana patients. You know, they're going to be folks who are going to be using this probably on a daily basis for their medical condition. And so when you pull them over and you test them, you know, what are we looking at? And I think right now the law says about 2 nanograms is what you're looking at. But the research has shown us that if you draw the blood or however you test them, the 2 nanograms is actually the margin of error.
Right.
And so you don't know for sure if they're impaired. And so I think Senator Harris's bill would raise that to 5 nanograms, which I think is at this point, without having a lot more research done, is a prudent step. Well, many other states have already gone to that level. But that's why I think that when we talk about a study, I know we do a lot of studies here. I know a lot of people want to do studies, and sometimes it's not the prudent thing to do. It's just sort of like the natural step, because you can't get something done right now. This right here is, I think, invaluable. I mean, you have to have something that gives us more data so that we can make better policy.
And the fact that it's become already a major industry in the Silver State, we need to balance all of these different aspects to come up with the right solution. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, sir. Please come back again before the end of session.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And we'll be right back.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. At Design Outdoor, we specialize in all hardscapes, pavers, and walls you'll need for everything, from wonderful small yards to full-blown outdoor living. And we only refer the best contractors to make your vision a reality. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
One of the most psychologically damaging things parents can do to children in divorce is disparage one another, which is why I can't believe I even have to make this commercial. Half of your kids' genetics come from this person you're spewing hate about. Your children have the right to love you both, but more than that, they deserve to love themselves.
Marilyn York might be a men's rights divorce attorney, but this is for every selfish parent. Shut up!
Shut up! Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. A lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the state capitol. We have a great Power Pundit panel today. As always, Brian Wachter is here. He's Senior Vice President of the Retail Association of Nevada, your full title. Ruben Murillo is President of the Nevada State Education Association. Welcome back to the program, sir.
Thank you.
And Paul Muradkhan is Vice President of Government Affairs for the Las Vegas Metro Chamber of Commerce. Pleasure to have you all here. So, Brian, let's start out with you. Class size reduction jumps to the headlines.
Yeah, well, yesterday we had a hearing on AB 304, which, while it's not funded at the moment, seeks to actually require districts to not only seek to get to the expected student-teacher ratio that the state would come up with, but a plan on how to get there. So even if you have one of these waivers that a lot of these districts have, no longer would it be acceptable just to say, oh, we need the waiver. You can ask for the waiver, but now you need a plan on how to implement and get those costs down. And so I think class size reduction, and I don't know, Mr. Murillo would agree, but I think class size reduction has to be one of the biggest priorities that this legislature looks at. Our teachers are overworked, underpaid, but the way you solve that, I think, is to first lower their class sizes and get that to a reasonable caseload, and AB 304 does just that.
Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Our teachers and our support professionals who work in the classrooms are overwhelmed by the number of students in the classroom. You hear stories of honors classes where they don't have enough chairs, or they have, instead of 20, they'll have 40, 50 kids in a classroom. And even in your classrooms like biology or in elementary school, we read stories yesterday during testimony from teachers who actually had 34 to 40 students in first grade, fourth grade. And how do you give a good quality public education when you have so many students and also the right resources to help them?
Paul?
No, obviously the Chamber agrees with that concept too. Class size reduction, we know, is an indicator to help with student success and teacher success in the classroom, so we're supportive of that policy and have been for years.
Well, and Sam, there is money available in new revenue to be able to start looking at lowering class sizes. We're spending, you know, close to $200 million in new education funding that the governor has proposed. Right now it's not being spent on class size reduction, or at least it's not expected to be, but there is the money available. So if the legislature wanted to have a policy discussion about lowering class sizes, it certainly could.
Go ahead.
So there's two things to that. We've been talking for the last 10, 15 years about reducing class sizes, and nothing has happened. And I think the frustration, and we appreciate, you know, Assemblywoman Miller bringing it forward, because she is in the classroom. And nothing seems to be getting done every year. We talk about it. Districts apply for waivers, and still our population is growing. I have a friend who teaches first grade, and when there's a teacher that's gone and there's no substitute, for example, they move half of the teacher's class into his classroom, and all of a sudden he's got to do management of behaviors and also try to instruct, you know, 40 kids in a classroom because of the shortage of substitutes.
And one of the things that I don't think people realize is that Las Vegas is back to a situation of approximately 6,000 people a month moving to Las Vegas. So the population is going to be growing dramatically over the next few years.
Absolutely, and you know, and back in 2015, there was a bill to expand the construction bond rollover to help address and build more schools, but it still doesn't keep up with the need, class size reduction. So that's why I think you're hearing the messaging from the business community that We do support class size reduction. We just need to ensure those dollars are there to implement that, to Mr. Morello's point.
Okay, so let's talk about read by three. So at this point, there's a pushback on this from what was put together by Governor Sandoval. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that they're on the right direction, taking a look at what the consequences would be if you were to hold back 9,000 students, 5,000 students, whatever the number would be. Do we have the resources to make sure that those students have an adequate education at third grade? The investment has to be K through two actually, and pre-K especially, to be able to get students to that level. But the way the bill was constructed, you know, next year we're supposed to hold back 10,000 students. Talk about the facilities to house 10,000 students in third grade. How is that going to work? The strategies that have been used for Read by Three have been proven to be mixed results, but mostly positive. Now, it's the part that where you withhold a child with the different clauses to, you know, special ed and ELL students, that still leaves a large number of students that will be impacted.
So what's the answer? Is it remedial education at this level?
Well, I think part of the conversation, I think that what's clear in that is literacy specialists play an important role in that conversation. And I think the bill that you saw yesterday was modified to ensure that literacy specialists have a more active role in the schools and the school site. And we think that's probably will help address some of those concerns.
Right. Well, and you know what? I'm going to ask you to hold. We're going to hold you guys over to the next show, and I will give you the first shot.
Thank you, Sam.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Penny! Dad? What are you learning? This place is great.
Huh?
You gotta try this. Wow! This stuff is great! People are gonna love it!
Yes. Yes, they were.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lorianne, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Pro Group Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. Pro Group Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Another way to watch Nevada Newsmakers, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll see you on the next broadcast.